Unit 2. What Life Has Taught Us. Every Grain of Rice Reflects the Virtue of Hard Labor by Jocelyn Eichenberg. One evening in May, while spending a summer break at my in-laws' home in rural Zhejiang province, I returned from a walk around the village to discover a dusty brown water ox tied to a tree just outside the gate of their house. It stood perfectly parallel to the road, much like a parked vehicle. Apart from grazing the grass at its hooves and eyeing me with a stony gaze, that suggested I best keep my distance. The water ox signaled to me, long before I even entered the house, that we would have dinner that evening with a distant relative, a man I simply referred to as Uncle. A tiger in the Chinese zodiac, this uncle often joked about how much he embodied the sign, calling himself fierce. But you could believe it, given his thunderous voice, that even the ox minded, his ability to move beehives, and the fact that he made a living slaughtering livestock, with some dubbing him the finest butcher in town. Upon settling onto my stool at the table, I soon learned why the uncle had brought along his ox. He had spent the afternoon leading the water ox through my in-law's square plot of land in the terraced fields, plowing it in preparation for growing rice. This uncle never shied away from hard tasks, such as working the rice fields, and his face bore witness to this fierce side to him, weathered and tanned from years of labor outdoors in all sorts of conditions. Watching him and the water ox move slowly through the sunny fields, as I did later on, proved fascinating. The ox, strapped with a harness fitted with a large metal V-shaped plow, trudged forward through the muddy plot. The uncle, barefoot, with his pants rolled up above his knees, followed behind as he steered the animal back and forth, part of the slow, timeless dance of man and beast in agriculture. This scene actually represented only one of the many tiring steps for cultivating rice. The process also involves watering the fields, transplanting rice plants into the land, fertilizing, weeding, removing pests, cutting the golden stalks in the fall, extracting and winnowing the grains, sun-drying the grains prior to storage, and then polishing the grains into rice at a processing station. Each stage demands a large amount of time and painstaking effort. It's no wonder that the process of growing rice has become a metaphor for the hardship behind every great accomplishment, immortalized in the line from the legendary poet Li Shen. 水之盘中餐,粒粒皆辛苦. How many know that every grain in a dish results from hard labor? Through observing this uncle and his water ox in the fields, I've gained more of an appreciation of what it takes to supply us with some of the most common and yet vital things in our lives, like rice. When we come to understand that much of our world has been built through intense labor, we're more willing to work harder and won't just give up when life challenges us to plow ahead. And if you can do that, it won't matter whether you're a tiger. You'll be fierce too. In Old Frontiers Man's Lost Horse, We Find Encouragement by Jocelyn Eichenberg. Long before I ever uttered my first word in Mandarin Chinese, I encountered a story that has helped me redefine how I approach the good and the bad in life. The tale of the Old Frontiers Man's Lost Horse, or Sai Wang Shi Ma. According to the tale, an old man living near the border, happened to lose his horse when it ran away. People came to comfort him, but he responded by saying, "Why couldn't this be something fortunate?" After a few months, the horse returned to the old man, bringing along with it a number of fine steeds from the frontier. People came to offer congratulations, but the old man said, "Why couldn't this be a disaster?" The old man now had many horses at his home, and his son loved to ride, But one day, while on horseback, the son fell off and broke his leg. People came to console the old man, who instead told them, "Why couldn't this be a good thing?" A year later, barbarians carried out a large-scale invasion on the frontier, and every able-bodied young man took up arms to go to war. Many of them died, but the son was saved from going to battle because of his lame leg, allowing him and his father to survive in safety. Ever since I first read this story as a high school student, I've returned to it again and again whenever the world yields more sorrows than sweetness. Things that seem bad might actually prove to have a silver lining, one we might not discern at first. This idea has provided a certain reassurance I depend on amid the changes of life. And indeed, sometimes what seems apparently unfortunate can still yield blessings after all. For example, years ago, when I returned to China from the United States, I came for a position at an organization in Hangzhou that soured after only 4 months. But because I quit the position, I fell into a wonderful new job at an internet company, the same firm that my future husband, Jun, would enter only months later, allowing the two of us to meet and fall in love. From this perspective, those 4 bitter months proved fortuitous. Psychology professionals might point out that the story of the old frontiersman's lost horse could serve as a more ancient example of the idea of reframing, to look at a situation from a different angle. Of course, not everything lends itself easily to a more uplifting rewrite. However, approaching the world with an eye toward the positive and the hopeful possibilities in life does mean we're more likely to find encouragement elsewhere, even in the little things. I like to play a game with my husband I call However. Whenever one of us brings up some bad news or a negative situation, the other responds with the word however, as a prompt to speak out the possible good side to what happened. I have a feeling the old frontiersman who lost a horse would approve.
Lasting image in the mind is better than a quick snapshot. By Corrie Knight. Last month, I wrote about the World Press Photo Exhibition. I'd like to stay with the subject of photography, but the amateur kind. I was in a Beijing art gallery a few weeks ago, when my attention was drawn to the visitors taking photos on their smartphones. Nothing unique there. But the key difference is that young art lovers prefer a more tactile experience with the exhibits. Sculptures are picked up, posed with, and photos taken. It's brave, because I'd be too scared of breaking something and being left with a hefty bill. Selfies with paintings are the most popular. Young people often mimic the pose of the artist's muse or gesture beside the canvas. They were having fun, but it interfered with my desire to inspect the exhibits. After 20 minutes, I was starting to get annoyed, so I moved to a quieter room. Predictably, I heard a crash from where I'd just left. I hope for their sake it wasn't too expensive an accident. I would never deny someone the chance to take a photo, despite the inconvenience it can cause. I enjoy the hobby as much as anyone else. But when I see dozens of people taking the same photograph, I start to grimace. Most people have a mobile phone with a camera and online access. As a result, the world is being recorded at a dizzying rate. Photography used to be a hobby of the wealthy few in Victorian times. Now, anyone can get involved, which is great, but it is sometimes misused. Increasingly, photographs cannot be trusted. Thanks to sophisticated image-altering software, they're useless as historical documents. Deepfake technology has extended this dilemma to videos too. My biggest worry is that it's harming people's concentration. I'm not just talking about people being injured when taking selfies or not paying attention when crossing the road. I think fewer people are living in the moment. I saw this a few years ago when visiting São Jorge Castle in Lisbon, Portugal. Tourists would walk into the watchtower, using their cameras as eyes, hit the shutter and walk out. I sat down and admired the wonderful panoramic view for 10 minutes. Dozens came and barely spent a minute there. Then it struck me, the scenery was not being enjoyed by those people. Instead, it was to be consumed by their social media friends later on. It's twisted. Having a holiday is no longer enough, it seems, unless your online peers approve. It's natural to want to take a photo of a beautiful sight. But if you go online, you can summon a picture of anything. So why bother? Perhaps I take photography too seriously, but I have little to offer as an amateur. Unless, of course, I stumble across an earth-shattering event, which is unlikely. This has led me to rebel. I don't take photos unless something really stands out. I tell myself that I'll remember things better by not having a photo to revisit. The logic is that I'm forced to look harder at the time. If I do forget, maybe it wasn't worth remembering. It's an easy habit to start. I can always rely on laziness, and I can comfort myself with the knowledge that there's likely a photograph already online.
Finding the Faith to Move Forward in the Darkness by Jocelyn Eichenberg. When the mountain trail you thought would take you downhill suddenly ends in a great snarl of thorny bushes and it's nearly dusk, you know there's trouble ahead. That's the situation my husband June and I faced years ago when we decided to reach the summit of the mountain at the center of his rural village in Zhejiang Province, and I never imagined that in getting lost there, I would find something far more important. While we had always wanted to reach the top, which drove us to hike there in the afternoon, we hadn't planned for such a dangerous descent. But our experience hiking around the village and its hidden network of unofficial trails should have prepared us for this possibility. How many times had we followed a well-trodden dirt path only to have it stop in a thicket of weedy grass or a maze of bamboo? In fact, the very trail we used to climb the mountain had also disappeared into the woods, forcing us to find a way through a dense cluster of bushes and trees. However, the summit appeared deceptively neat, with a clearing and what seemed to be a far easier trail winding down the other slope of the mountain. We thought it would be a fast, straightforward trip back, but the trail disappeared, leaving us stranded in fields overgrown with layers of weeds and crawling thorns. If we wanted to make it back home, we would have to make our own way out of there, in the dark. As a lifelong hiking enthusiast, I had logged hundreds of kilometers on trails in parks across the United States, my home country, but never at night. And yet there we were, trapped on the side of a mountain in near darkness with no established trail at all. I felt scared, beyond just the fact that walking ahead meant facing a prickly field of thorns. I worried we might take the wrong step and tumble down, or fall into something even worse than those thorns, since we couldn't see the ground. How could we possibly move forward? "Just take one step at a time," my husband told me. "Don't worry." It was his way of encouraging me to have faith. Faith is something I've struggled with in life, and being on that mountain was a test for me. It took all of my resolve to lift my foot up and place it among those thorns. But it turned out okay, and so did the next move, and the one after that. With each small step of progress, I found myself gradually gaining confidence in our ability to make it home and in ourselves. Sometimes it's incredible how in the midst of something fearful, we can still find the strength within ourselves to move on and to believe, even if it's just through one tiny action at a time. When we eventually spied the soft white glow of windows from a house beside the road, announcing our return to civilization, waves of relief washed over me. While I told my husband we were fortunate, I also recognized it wasn't luck that led us out of the darkness. We did it, and knowing that gave me a little more faith.